Hi, this is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today, and this is Radio ITVT. We are very happy to have, for the first time, Ron Downey, who's the CEO and co-founder of a 21-year-old company called Massive, and they're at massive.co. It's massive.co. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Thanks, Tracy. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. All good. It's very good. Nice weather in San Francisco. Are you in London?
Nice weather in London. Yes. It's a beautiful day here as well.
Well, like I said, this is the first time we've had you on Radio ITVT. We've spoken in the past, of course, but we're excited to have you here because you develop, a complete, seems like end-to-end platform for OTT operators, and we really want to find out, what you're up to. And I know you are you're very much involved in leading the company and finding ways to innovate. And I'm really, really curious about, that. So let's kind of go from there. So this company has been around for 21 years. You founded it. You're one of the co-founders with Derek Ellis, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And yes, 21 years ago.
Actually, 22 years ago.
That's a long time ago to start this. Obviously 22 years ago, OTT didn't really exist. And I'm trying to think of the math. I should have done that. But what was this founded as a web design company? Or what was the initial reason to start Massive?
Yeah, it actually was. We started the company as we had big ambitions, that's the name, Massive, but we came from a design background. And then, in the early 90s, design firms often decided to move into what was, I don't know if it was called digital then, but started to move into doing things for CD-ROM development, kiosk development, and early web stuff. So, we kicked off as a company that aspired to do, industrial grade things for big, challenging, demanding clients. And in fact, early on, we started to focus on entertainment clients. So though we were sort of a web developer, we targeted, our first clients were people like 20th Century Fox, News Corp, MSN was Microsoft Network was one of our first three clients. So, clients that had big challenging demands very early on in the digital era for for MSN, we developed, I think it was the first global web experience that was built completely in Flash, which was, I don't think it was called Flash, but it was called Future Splash.
I'm going to interrupt you just quickly, but I actually have, because I was working in a publication at the time, the company that had Future Splash, I think it was called Splash, came in and presented to us. I have the original Splash here in a box covered in plastic.
How about that? That's quite amazing. Yeah, those were the days. That was it was crazy times. And I think becoming early users of Flash when it was still in beta form really started to contribute to or lead us in a particular direction. And then in those first few years, the first two or three years of the business from between 96 and 99, we also started to come in contact with companies like OpenTV and Liberate, who were doing, some of the very first ITV deployments. So we got involved very early on doing some things for cable operators, and particularly one in Australia, which was called Austar, where we built out their first ITV service on OpenTV and NDS Core. And that was, as you know, in those days, you the challenge was, how do you deliver anything that's worth looking at over a paste set-top box that can do 3K a second? And because we were a design firm, the ask was always great in terms of trying to get something that was going to be very usable, compelling. But working, with those constraints was a great environment to cut our teeth on. And then, as you know, in subsequent years, network speeds increased, and we could see a time when the whole world was going to have blue cables coming into their living rooms, mm-hmm. delivering higher speed. We start to gear up for that, but. Yeah, in the early days, it was very much about working with very low powered, dumb devices.
I mean, you really are veterans of the industry. You have really seen, rise and fall of middleware, and through now to the complete, OTT agenda. Weren't you working in those early days with like 128 colors or something extremely low, right? It was very, very difficult to do anything creative back then.
It was. And with those constraints, as well as the constraints of, the processing power of the boxes and network speed, building a little UI that would sit over the top of a television screen and maybe allow you to click on an interactive ad or, buy a football jersey, engage in some early e-commerce was a real trick. And it required a lot of juggling in the background. You had to actually anticipate what the user was going to want to do next and start preloading that. So there was some real risk in that because it was an absolute juggling act to do anything that was worthwhile. And as you know, ITV without the P in it, it was a flash in the pan, and then it kind of died, and then it didn't. These things didn't start to resurrect until we saw the advent of things like Red Button. BBC and Canal Plus were doing some interesting things. I think they were the first, the real leaders in the world in this area. And then, everybody had broadband, and we could all do anything. But I think having had to hack it out in a much tougher environment, in the late 90s, it did harden our company, and it also got us thinking about, what are these operators going to be wanting to do in 2006 and 2009 and 2015 and in 2020. And that got us thinking about, are we always going to do this thing, every single time, reinvent the wheel, rebuild a service for every client with changing and diverse needs, or are we going to start to look at the lowest common denominators and start to build out a solution, a product that could enable clients to hit their, core requirements. And then obviously, when you're talking about UI, there's always going to be some, there's going to be custom elements around the edges. So that's what we started doing in the early 2000s.
And now you have a platform called AXIS, AXIS. Mm-hmm. That, from what I can tell, it pretty much can, like you said, do anything. It delivers all kinds of services: the content, the targeting, the analytics, the delivery of advertising, user interface, personalization. I know you're working with AI, machine learning, all kinds of stuff. So it's sort of an all you can eat platform, and I mean, with so much power at your disposal right now, is your main mission to deliver that kind of platform, just sort of for the next 20 years? Is that the overall goal? Is that the overall mission? And talk a little bit about where this platform is going as a whole.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that is, we've gone from many years ago, building websites and entertainment websites. I remember we did one of the first Big Brother websites with in-room cameras, 24-hour sort of being able to engage with the cast there. And, we built betting applications.
I remember that. We reported on all that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, we developed an engineering sort of legacy that was game to do anything, but where we saw, I think it's always important to assess yourself and look at where you're strongest. And because we came from being a design agency in the first instance, everything we do software-wise and technologically is completely user-centric, design-centric. We have a bit of an Apple-like obsession with design. So, we kind of had to start to think about, as tens of thousands of web developers ended up coming onto the scene, we had to think about, what we were good at and what we were best at. And it seemed to be, very much connected to, from a sector point of view, entertainment and sports. From a technology point of view, video. And it within that realm, it was very much focused around UI, user interface and user experience, which does go back to those early experiences of working on, very dumb set-top boxes. So those all fed into, how we devised our business plan for the next years, starting in, 2004-05. And, we determined that two things. We were going to take all the user stories and requirements of all the big operators that we had served for those intervening years, and we were going to sort of process those into a single set of requirements. And then we were going to look at the horizon and see how those, might evolve over the next 5-7 years. And then we were going to build a product to address those needs. So we kind of transitioned from being a generalist to being a specialist in video, and within video to being a UI specialist. And we also transitioned, between 2005 and 2010, from being a services company to being a product company. And so, today, 98% of the business we do is predicated on a product sale of Axis, the product that you mentioned. So I guess to answer your question about the next 20 years, you can't have a technology business plan that extends much beyond 2 or 3 years. And even then, you've got to be very tactical within those 2 or 3 years, keep analyzing the horizon. You've got to watch what's happening in the consumer realm, what's happening in the technology realm. What are manufacturers doing with all the devices that we serve, and continuing to create something that's relevant to assist our clients in serving their customers better. So we'll keep playing that game for as many years as we can.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the clients that you are working with now, because I want to understand better the relationship between delivering a great user experience, which obviously that's what sells, but it's also the power of the platform and what customers need in terms of delivering good user information architecture and the services that deliver monetization. So I know you're working with the BBC, and you have a number of very top tier companies like Lionsgate and Channel 5 in the UK, mm-hmm. et cetera, and you're delivering a multi-platform, cross-platform experience for, all of them or some of them. And I know you also do in-air, air flight, movie mm-hmm. experiences. Yep. So you're working with companies that really have huge needs and who require probably a lot of careful integration of a number of different technology services that they're using. And I'm that being said, I'm curious, can you talk a little bit about the challenges behind working with some of these top tier clients. It's like, what are their needs right now for delivering content? Because I mean, you know, the content, you know, maybe may overlap, might be the same. It might change across the world, but what kinds of trends are you seeing when you need to deliver or an OTT platform for clients all over the world? What are those challenges?
Okay, yeah, I think.
What are their needs, and then what are their challenges?
Sorry. Yeah, if we talk about it, they're, we look at the client's challenges. I mean, you know, in years past, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when you'd see the RFPs coming out for these operators, you know, OTT platforms, they were very centered on, you know, who's going to be my CDN, who's going to be my streaming, you know, provider, who's going to do hosting, you know, transcoding, encoding. Those were the focal points of the buyer's obsession. And, you know, people like us were sort of relegated to a second phase or a last phase, that these CTOs who, you know, many of whom came from, they were old telco CEOs and, you know, people who came from cable TV, and they love talking about their CDN. And, you know, it's really flipped now to where all the C-level guys and the product people, the product owners, you know, they sort of expect that all those things should just be in place. And, you know, those are very price-driven considerations. Mm-hmm. In terms of what vendors they go with, because there are a lot of qualified, you know, vendors in those spaces. So where the focus has shifted to is on customer experience. That's where we see, you know, CEOs, you know, CMOs, you know, marketing directors, CPOs, they're all obsessed with, you know, the their customer's experience. The rest should work, but they want to know what's my customer going to be touching, seeing, experiencing, and what can my people internally do to make that the best possible experience, you know, every day of the week, every hour of the day. So, you know, I think that's where, you know, we've seen a huge focus change. It's we waited for 20 years for this, you know, for our clients to be obsessing about user experience and customer experience instead of, you know, the bits and bytes involved in streaming and storage. So we're now, you know, we've spent years building a platform that, as I said earlier, you know, has ingested all the user stories of all the, you know, every telco, every cable operator, every studio we've ever worked for. And we've used those user stories and requirements to build out a user experience management platform that enables internal users at our client end to manage their offering on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour, minute-by-minute basis. And also, we've now enabled, through doing that, you know, people with much lower technical proficiency. So, you know, marketers, schedulers, editors, design people to play a part in actually touching, you know, the UI and affecting the experience that their customers and users are going to engage with. So, and in doing that, you know, I mean, if you roll back a few years, that was all done by hand. So when people like us would launch a new service for for an operator, it would generally be custom built. It wasn't very user friendly, and they were generally very static. So, you know, you'd have your LG app and your Samsung app and your Roku app and your iOS app and your Android app, and, you know, to evolve those, to make any changes, involves, you know, going to your vendors and, you know, issuing change requests and getting those things. Very, very small changes, you know, little design changes, color changes, you know, it was unthinkable that you could change the order of, you know, the content rails or things like that, or change your whole shape of your UI, you know, with two or three clicks. So the operational costs in running these UIs has been, you know, extremely high. And so I guess in terms of the specific problems we're now, you know, trying to solve for our clients are, you know, it's about having a, you know, a global management control center for your UI. And that's, when I say your UI, that's your service across, you know, it might be 14 or 20 or 35 apps on many different manufacturers' platforms. So those need to be managed from a central place. For the most part, we've moved the application logic from the device side, you know, from the client side to the server side, which allows for, you know, better speed and, mm-hmm. and performance of the apps. And I guess the end result of all that is that we're, you know, our goal is to create operational efficiencies for our clients that enable them to, you know, to just be able to do more stuff with their UI anytime they want to at a much lower cost, and to more efficiently react to their customers, their customers' behaviors. So we're trying to close the loop now, you know, on UI backend for and all that entails, and all the rich data and analytics that our clients are now collecting. So, you know, as you know, that's probably one of the most exciting area in all of the online world right now, especially for technology companies and investors, is what's happening with data. There's been a real disconnect between, we see our clients investing in, you know, providers and vendors of data and analytics services that they have all this rich stuff, but they don't. There's no mechanism for actioning it at the UI end of things, because those UIs are often hard coded, and, you know, so there's a huge disconnect. So our goal has been to create a platform that enables the sophisticated actioning of data, both manually. So I, you know, I'm an operator, I'm a scheduler. I see a bunch of analytics data come in from one of my providers, and I see that, you know, a certain segment of my viewers is not going anywhere near some of the content we have in a certain rail. I'm able to manually, you know, move things around, shift things around. I can also even segment that activity to, you know, make that only for you know, for tablet users of a particular demographic, or, you know, logged in subscribers or non-logged in users. So I'm able to action the data that I'm getting from my data providers, and then where we're further closing the loop is to enable, you know, intelligent, automated, programmatic UI changes based on incoming data. For example, you know, we can set a rule that everybody whoever logs on whose credit card is now less than 30 days to expiry, they get an automated sort of, you know, they get their own screen next time they come on that says, you know, hey, Tracy, your credit card is about to expire. You know, put in new credit card details. If you do that, we'll give you, you know, 3 months free of our new sports channel service. You know, so there are obviously huge possibilities there for reducing churn and, you know, and pumping up ARPU with their client bases. So those are the kind of problems we're trying to solve right now, and we're seeing great uptake by the market for those things.
Would you say that it's a higher priority to innovate to enable the operators to have better, more powerful ways to collect data, and so creating the engineering or the rule sets or, you know, the flexibility so that they can create new ways of collecting data, or would you say it's more important to innovate the platform so that they can create more flexible user experiences? Where's your money going? What are your priorities between those two things?
Well, it's really hard to separate those. Good question. I think, you know, sticking to your knitting, where your sweet spot is, we will continue to put, you know, a huge amount of investment in just giving more and more flexibility and power to the operator, you know, to enhance and, you know, enrich the way they can, you know, address their customer via the UI. But because we know the power of data, we know, you know, the credit card example I just used. I mean, that's incredibly powerful. We would be remiss if we didn't start to incorporate the actionability of data into our platform. But by the same token, we're also, because we're the thing that the user is actually touching and moving around and playing with their mouse or controller, we're also gathering unique data ourselves that we can push back up upstream to our clients and allow them to make decisions. So because we're running the UI, you know, we can, those sort of very brass tacks sort of pieces of data that have to do with, you know, user interaction physically over the UI, you know, scrolling, hovering, you know, people are hovering in a particular location and not clicking. Those are all very useful bits of data that allow us to then allow the operator to make decisions or to set rules. If something's like, you know, that can be automated or it can be manual. But I guess the answer is we have to do both now.
Are you creating opportunities for the operators to explore voice control, you know, or is it just, you know, simple sort of calling out for specific keywords? Is that an area of opportunity for innovation?
It is. I mean, we're not very focused on voice right now. I mean, there are other the device makers are already doing those kinds of things, and obviously you've got all the Alexas of the world and things coming out. So we are. I mean, our UI design, UX and D teams are working with voice as well as things like VR. We're doing a couple of really interesting mm-hmm. VR projects right now, which I can't say much about, except that
I was going to say, can you know, mention those? Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I can't. But you know, things like, and this is a little left field for us in terms of core business, but we think it's worthwhile engaging in these kinds of things. So, for example, VR. Game show concepts, which mm-hmm. are very, very cool. And when you really think about VR and you think about a game show, it's probably one of the only TV formats, or probably one of the strongest TV formats for VR to play a role in. So yeah, voice, VR, those kinds of things. We're definitely trying to R&D in, but. You know, we're a big believer in sticking to your knitting. So right now, you know, we're selling a platform that gives our customers the ability to manage, you know, huge suites of applications across different geographies and different brands and products from a single place. And that's going to be our theme, you know, for a while to come.
Speaking of sticking to your knitting, I mean, one thing I believe is an opportunity for someone is to not just give the operator the internal control to create the user interface, but to give the customer the ability to design their own interface based on maybe a set of templates or opportunities and to have that sort of flexibility. I mean, look at the way, you know, people create their own web pages with, you know, simple platforms out there. And, you know, is that even possible? I know the operators have never really allowed this. They've experimented with it occasionally, but they want to maintain the brand and the editorial control. But what do you think? Do you think that that's an opportunity for you? Do you think your customers might find that, you know, that might they might be able to monetize that, you'd think? I'd pay more for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to be able to rearrange my Amazon Prime UI and my Netflix UI. I would. It reminds me of, I'm trying to remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, where there were websites. You know, you could sort of design your own.
Yeah, they were. You were. You're right. Yeah.
What were they? I don't think that's at all a crazy idea. And I think that, you know, the ability to that's hyper personalization when you actually allow the user to personalize themselves, which is something that we definitely should look into. I'll have to take you out to dinner, Tracy, if we're successful in that one. But,
well, I hope I'll see you in AVOT. But yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, but no, I think that's certainly not a crazy idea.
Okay, all right. Well, speaking of innovation in UI for a second again, to some extent, the ones that we have available out there in the world on Apple, Roku, Chrome, you know, or the big platforms like you're working with, where you're basically getting an OTT experience. I mean, everybody knows what an OTT experience looks like. You get a bunch of, you know, movie art or app, you know, applications you can navigate through. And I mean, and to some extent, I would say a lot of these services kind of look alike. You know, they're a little different. They rearrange the horizontals differently, maybe, but there used to be a lot more experimentation and attempts to create something completely novel. I mean, obviously VR will take us in a different direction, but do you think we've hit a wall in sort of being able to arrange in a horizontals, you know, 16x9 space, and there's only so many, you know, ways to do that? Or do you think there are other services out there that maybe you've seen that are really innovating this model? I mean, is anything inspiring you out there, or do you think that
I think it's a really, once again, I think it's an interesting question, because, you know, it's inevitable, I think, that standards emerge for, you know, common usage of things. You know, even, you know, having the accelerator in a car under the right foot and having, you know, steering wheel in front of the driver and, you know, having the radio where it is. I mean, I guess really creative car manufacturers could look at all kinds of different ways to change that. But these norms, these usage norms sort of develop over time. And if you look at websites these days, I mean, they do all look alike, and they're all using those, you know, the same conventions, the parallax, you know, scrolling and all that. It's pretty standard. And I think that might be a bit faddish, and I think that might change again. And with OTT services, especially for, you know, film and TV box set kind of entertainment, there has, you know, there's kind of a Netflix view that, you know, is pretty common. And I guess, to be fair, we're called upon, you know, often to create just that kind of experience. But I think these things kind of, they tend to, you know, there's some innovation around usability of something, and then it plateaus and seems to go for quite a long time, you know, in that same state. And then something comes around the corner, and, you know, I don't know, the world changes, people change, and technology changes, and then there's a new paradigm. So I wouldn't rule out that there are other paradigms, and we're looking at, you know, still different ways to present, for example, EPGs. You know, there's the standard grid EPG that everybody's used to, but we've had some success in sort of diverging from that model and doing some things that seem like they could be useful and compelling to users. So I think there's definitely room for innovation. I think right now the world is kind of stuck on the, you know, hero images and then the rails, the content rails down below. But I can think of products recently that we've done for people that start to diverge from that strict model. So it is sort of almost frustrating that it seems to get into this static mode. But I think it's going to change, and I think that we're certainly going to push the limits there. And back to your point about users, you know, personalizing their own thing. I mean, I think ultimately the way people use all of their apps and devices throughout the day is going to feed back into what OTT sort of interfaces look like. Right. And, you know, I think another place that we're seeing some variation there is talking about sports, you know, live. I think once you get back into the live arena with live sports, OTT sports, which, you know, we have a client called DAZN, which is part of the Perform Group, uh-huh. which is a big OTT sports service that is, you know, threatening the traditional cable TV sports titans with, you know, premium sports on OTT that you can only get if you're a subscriber and you can't get them on in certain markets, you know, on TV. Those kinds of services are doing, I think, more innovative things with UI. I think we'll see it with other live applications. And also, as you start to get into the innovation could be driven out of other areas that aren't your typical OTT initiative, like, you know, hospitality, airlines, you know, those are like great sandboxes for innovation to occur that moves back into the sort of TV, tablet, mobile phone space. So, and we're watching all those, and we're pushing, you know, limits on all those, and hopefully we'll continue to make it interesting and not just look like Netflix.
By the way, we have Juan Delgado from Perform, the CEO, who will be at TVOT, so you know.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Well, that'll be an interesting presentation.
You mentioned that you were working on VR and game shows, and I'm kind of curious, are you being asked to create content itself rather than, you know, a platform that delivers content, or the UI UX experience of accessing content, you know, the discovery process? Are you being asked to develop individual shows as a sort of complete interactive experience? Because with sports, obviously there's going to be a lot of opportunity to continue to explore that.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because it kind of gets into the McLuhan-esque concept of the media being the medium being the message. I guess with what some of the stuff we're doing with VR, because it's so all encompassing in terms of what we have to devise as a user experience, that it is kind of part and parcel of the content. We wouldn't be deciding what the game show, or we're not deciding what the game show is about. We're not, picking the contestants and deciding what the questions or the objective is of the show. But because we're having to design the mechanics of how the user, or how, you know, viewers and users engage, you know, far, far more than just clicking a mouse or a button or touching a trackpad, I guess it does get into the realm of content. It's experience as content. It's where experience meets content.
Well, when you create, and I think that was well said, when you create, so many options, when anything can happen, the user navigating through that creates their own experience of that content, and that becomes the content. So yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sure. It's kind of like somebody driving on a freeway creates their own experience. And then the content might be the billboards coming at you or, you know, the cars that you see, but you're basically creating your own navigation experience you're telling your own story by doing that.
That's right.
And that's what interactive TV is supposed to be about.
It is. It is. Because especially once you get out of the realm of, you know, just the passive viewing of film, you know, movies and TV, and you get into live events, you know, live sports, competitions, game shows, concerts, and any other live format, then, yeah, it becomes a collaborative content creation exercise, I guess, from between the person who's providing the arena and the stage for the content, for the experience, but, you know, the users contribute, and I think from where we sit, we contribute to that as well by creating the possibilities and the framework for those things to occur in.
And I know you guys are deeply involved in, you know, the integration process, as I mentioned earlier. To what extent are your clients asking you to help build commerce opportunities? So not only are you watching content and you're gathering data, but they actually want to deliver, you know, revenue to their advertisers, perhaps to commerce partners. Is that happening anywhere with all these international partners?
Yeah, I mean, and it runs a pretty diverse gambit. So, you know, everything from, I guess, strictly speaking, in terms of the core of what we do, we're providing opportunities for traditional, but in fact, more traditional opportunities for sponsorship of content within the service, as opposed to, ad plugins that are out there in the market. So, for example, you know, a couple of moves, a scheduler or marketer who's authorized to go in and change the UI can curate a rail of content or a section of content on an OTT service, and then they can wrap that in branding, and that can be sponsored content by a brand, advertiser. And you know, it's as easy as, I mean, it's a few minute job, you know, to do that. And we've put additional tools for designers and marketers in our product for them to really make that piece jump out and be, you know, extremely visible and high profile in the UI. So that's something that we haven't seen anybody else doing. It's not, you can imagine the CPMs on that, you know, are going to be astronomically higher than other, you know, traditional kind of advertising measurements. So I guess at the core of what we're doing, things like that. But we're also, because Axis, Axis can ingest, from an unlimited array of upstream sources, feeds and data, we can, things like incorporating a store into a video app is an easy integration job for us, because we're just basically windowing something that's effectively could be a website.
What area for innovation? Yeah. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
That's all right.
Another area I'm curious about that I think there is an opportunity for innovation. When, for these OTT platforms, is building in a community layer. Are you doing anything like that in any of your platform, with any of your clients?
There's a lot more interest in that now. Once again, to be really honest, it's been mostly about selling stuff, selling subscriptions, or if it's AVOD, selling advertising. I do think there's more focus around the social and community side of apps. We've, in the past, we've done, harking back to times, which show how old we are. You know, I remember building very early second screen experiences for example, for auto racing in Australia, where, you know, it was a premium racing brand that was televised and very, very popular with, you know, with racing fans. And we built a really rich second screen experience that incorporated more video, in-car cameras, GPS, you know, change driver, change car. And it was absolutely smashed by the user base. They loved it. And I think, you know, second screen sounds so 90s now, but I do think that the whole aspect of social interaction around content, whether we call that second screen or some sort of, you know, over the top function, is, I think that's going to be a big growth area in the next few years. And we're seeing it like with sports, which really big.
Okay, well, actually, we have definitely kept you for the better part of an hour. So I think I've asked a lot of questions that I had on my list here. It's almost like we have to have another interview to cover this even more. But maybe you should come to TVOT so we can ask you in person.
Absolutely.
So much when you have so much experience over all a couple of decades. You know, you almost could write a book or make a documentary from your experience, I'm sure, of this industry.
I still want to do that one of these days.
Yeah. Talk to me. I have a lot of archives here. But anyway, thank you so much, Ron. I don't think there's anything else I need to ask again, but is there anything else you want to add?
No, thanks so much for having me today. And it's been a great talk. And you asked some really good questions. So you challenged us a little bit today. So I got to go do some thinking now.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And good luck to you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
The music you're listening to is by a Japanese group called Pistol Jazz. This is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today and co-producer of the TV of Tomorrow show, which is coming up June 13th and 14th in San Francisco. Be sure to go to tvotshow.com and get your tickets before the price goes up May 1st. See you next time. Bye.